This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. And I am back with my next guest, Elizabeth Millane, and the name of her book is 60 Blades of Grass. And it is about the resistance in Holland. Hi!
Hello, how are you?
Okay. Do you want me to call you Betsy or Elizabeth?
No, call me Elizabeth so people don't get confused.
Okay, good.
I'm Elizabeth the author.
Elizabeth the author. I love how you have your name in gold on the cover. On top of the airplanes. I always stop whenever there's an airplane on the cover because my husband was a pilot, so I like to look at it. This is a very fine book and a wonderful story. I was, as an artist myself, I immediately gravitated to your character because I started thinking of myself, what would I do and how would I do the art that she does? So tell us about your character and about the background here of the story.
Oh, thank you so much for this. Really appreciate it. And by the way, the artwork, the cover, was decided on by my publisher and Peter Riva, which was fantastic. I'm glad I didn't muddle it. Anyway, in the office where I write, I have two paintings by Rika hanging up there, and sometimes I wonder if she's saying something with the blades of grass that are there. You had asked me for a little background about this. Okay, my relatives were originally Germans, and after the First World War, they came to Holland, and they wanted very much to establish themselves as Dutchmen and prove to the Dutch that they were aligned with them. My grandmother continued on over to America, where she married my grandfather, Nick, and they had 9 children, 8 of them girls, my mother the youngest. During my junior year abroad, I went to a British university, the University of Lancaster. It was an extraordinary experience, and during the vacations, I made great use of the Ural Pass and all the rails. And I visited my Dutch relatives about 3 times. I had met them originally when they had visited Muskegon, Michigan, where I'm from, and knew them somewhat. But one of the first times I got out of the cab in front of my aunt's, my great aunt's flat, a woman came running across the street and wrapped me up in her arms and was thanking me and kissing me, and I thought, I'm being mugged. This is an odd way to do it. But apparently my grandmother, knowing how horrible conditions were after the First World War, sent in multiple care packages every week that helped them to survive the end of the war. Anyway, when I was there, they gathered around me and they all spoke amazingly wonderful, clear, fluent English. And they told me their stories, and I was mesmerized by them. When I finally got back to the States, I wrote these stories down because my brothers and sisters, I'm one of 6, didn't have that opportunity to hear those stories. And I wanted to get them down because it told me the kind of people we are from. When my uncle thrust out his wrist to me and said, in our blood we are Germans, but in our hearts we are Dutchmen, I thought we should all know what they have done. So anyway, that's where the story came from. I wrote it down, I shared it with them, and then it just percolated in my head.
And how many years was it before you started to write it down?
I started to write it down about 12 years ago. I took writing classes and revised and listened to critiques and then started getting rejections. And I've got to tell you, the rejections are something that taught me so much. It taught me about the market. I'd say 50% of the book is the result of these wonderful rejections that I embraced. So anyway, after a while, I finally got an agent, not an easy feat, and he started sending it out. And again, after every rejection, I took what they said and I incorporated it into the book. And then, gosh, I think it was October, he called to say, we've got a publisher, Bloodhound Books wants it. And it was a wonderful, wonderful day.
Well, of course, Peter Riva is one of the greatest agents in the world, I think. And you're very lucky that you got him. But it also shows that how great you are, because he just doesn't take anybody. And so I know that he saw in you this great opportunity for you to really express yourself and to bring Rika alive, to bring this story alive. And you do learn from rejection. And of course, I love the style that you finally, you know, I'm sure you had her voice at one in your heart, and to get it down on paper is a challenge. And I like the format. I like her diary entries. I always like books with diary entries. It just makes it so compelling. You really feel the character. So when you finally decided how to do it, what was the flow for you? How did it flow out of you?
The first chapter that I wrote is the last chapter of the book. I was sitting at a writer's group, an editor was speaking, and all of a sudden the voice came to me. I got up from the chair, drove home, and had to get the entire thing down. And I don't think I changed much about that last chapter at all.
Oh.
So that's where the voice came from. And I listened to the voice, and then I had the voice of Maxim. And then I had the voice of Leishan. And the more I paid attention, the more they all spoke to me. And Amy, you know, I thought she was a lovely dimension in the book.
Isn't it exciting when that happens to you, when your characters take over?
Yes, absolutely. I'm glad that you understand that.
Oh, it is. There's something at one point where you feel them so much in your soul. You just know what they're going to say. And it's so exciting. And then when you see the words on paper and you know that you've gotten it right and that you're going to touch somebody's heart with your writing. And that's what you do, because this is, it's a complex story about something so horrific. This period in Holland when the Germans took over the country and what they were doing to the Jews. And tell us exactly what Rika's job here was in the beginning, what she was doing. We're not going to give, you know, things away, but I mean, this is important that she was an artist. And who told you about what she did? And how did you translate this into, you know, putting it on paper?
The relatives whom I met with during my junior year abroad when I visited Holland, I probably visited about three times, they told me about how she was asked as an artist to go to the rail yards, the bombed out rail yards, because the rail yards were the first place the Germans bombed during the invasion. Then they restored them. And initially, the Dutch did not know where their countrymen were being taken. They knew they were being rounded up. They knew that they were being taken away on trains, but they didn't know where they were going. Obviously, the Germans said relocation. But they thought if they took down all the information about the trains they could, for example, how many train cars, were they cattle or were they passengers? How many people were put on these transports? Was there violence? What direction the train took? If she could paint that in code, pretending to be an artist just painting the weeds in the rail yards, they could keep track of that information and retrieve their countrymen at the end of the war. That was their aim.
So you have, you said you have two of her paintings?
I do. I'm not sure if they were painted in that manner, but one has beautiful poppies and lots of leaves, and perhaps the inspiration to name the book 60 Blades of Grass came from that.
Wow. Most people don't understand how really horrific it was in Holland, the Netherlands. I still call it Holland. I think, you know, you mentioned that you're from Michigan, and I'm from northern Michigan, Upper Peninsula. And,
oh, wow.
And, of course, every once in a while we would go over to Holland, Michigan. You know, I don't know if you ever made that journey to Holland, Michigan, which was so fantastic for the flowers, because my mother loved tulips, and one of the greatest joys of her life and all of my childhood, the first thing we would do, you know, in northern Michigan, we waited for spring. We'd wait for spring. And my mother and I would always, in the fall, plant tulips. going to Holland, Michigan for the Tulip Festival was the highlights of my childhood.
Oh, I'll bet. I've lived not far from Holland. I visited there often. As a matter of fact, my father was responsible for them getting their first windmill from Holland directly.
Oh.
From the Netherlands.
Oh, that's, well, you know how magnificent it is to
it is.
See the Tulip Festival in Holland, Michigan, or in Holland itself.
Yes, yes. It's marvelous.
The country suffered so much during the war. Now, my father was in the Battle of the Bulge, and I followed his footsteps really from D-Day down, you know, through the Ardennes. So I did that area. But I also was in Holland many times and in Amsterdam many times. So how did it feel for you when you were there? Did you walk to some of the battlefields, some of the areas where there was fighting?
No, I did not. I visited with them. I went out to dinner with them. We did go to, and I put this in the back of the book. I won't give it away.
No.
But we did visit a seaside town. But many of them did not want to talk about the war. Maxim, especially, and Rika, especially, did not talk about the war after it was done.
Well,
so they wouldn't have given me a tour of them.
Yeah, no, this is the way it is for so many people. I also traveled a lot to Poland, and so I know how it is. That they don't want to talk about it. But there was the Dutch resistance. Most people have heard of the French resistance, but there was a Dutch resistance, and they did try to get the word out, not just on, you know, the transportation. They tried to get the word all the way across to America to wake America up to the tragedy of what was happening in Holland.
Yes, I should note this because in every talk I've had, people wondered why Holland and why the Netherlands saw so many of their Jews taken to the camps. And I picked up from my research this fact. The government supported the churches. If you wanted to create a church, you would go down to town hall and say, I'm creating this church, and you would be given money to support it. Their taxes supported it. So at town hall, they had all the churches and all the members listed there. When the Germans came in, they took over the town halls, got all the lists of the Jews and their addresses.
Yeah, they did. And it was, it's still hard. You know, it's strange, isn't it? Now we have a war again, a war in Europe, which we didn't think we were going to have another war in Europe, a land war in Europe, a war with tanks and guns and battlefields. So now this generation can see the horrors of war.
I agree with you. Absolutely. We're repeating so much of what happened. And I'm happy and pleased that the United States and all the allies are rallying to the Ukrainian government and Ukrainian people to fight this evil.
Your book, as we're reading it and we're learning more about Rika and about her dreams and her hopes for the future, tell us a little bit more about her family.
I didn't know who she loved. And she was an artist in Paris. I was told early on while I was developing the book that people wanted to feel closer to Rika. And actually, I'm going to tell you a little funny story right here. I thought, how do I get people to feel closer to Rika and to Maxim and to Lieschen? What should I do? And obviously, inventing a love life is something that's important. So I did. Then I went back to my mother and telling her about the process of the book. I said, you know, I had to invite sex lives, Mom. And my mother's 92, and she threw out her hands, and she said, you have to change the names. We still have relatives in Holland. I can't have this out there. So Rika and Maxim and Allie and our Aunt Amy and Lisbeth are all different names for that reason. I wasn't going to upset her with that.
Oh, that's funny. It is funny.
I did hear, though, you know, when I was a kid growing up, I heard the aunts whispering about my Aunt Lisbeth and how she had promised her mother on her mother's deathbed that she would remain unmarried and available to take care of her sister, Amy. The aunts were very disapproving of that promise. but they were also a little scandalized by her behavior after it. So I lend that into the book. I don't want to spoil it by saying.
What is interesting always when you're doing a period book, going back in history, what were some of the most surprising things you discovered in your research?
I couldn't believe the fortitude of the people who fought in the resistance and endangered their lives every day. I was recounting this to a friend of mine who had actually, his father had resisted the Pakistani government. And he's a silent fellow, but he rose up from the table that we were sitting at and said, "You would, when you're faced with such an evil regime and you see things going on, you just don't have any choice. You have to resist it because your life isn't worth it if you don't." So I thought that was astonishing. Obviously, not everybody did. There were a lot of collaborators, and that was the most worrisome thing. Who could you trust in Holland? At one point, and I was told this from my relative, they said, "Look who's getting fat," because they're collaborating. They're getting food from the Germans. Everybody who's starving isn't working with the Germans.
Wow. I think you've done a beautiful job with this book, telling the story of Rika and of the resistance and of the horrors of war.
Well, thank you.
Now that you're a writer, I'm sure you're writing a new book, or two, or three.
Yes. One book that I'm working on, I help families whose kids had cancer. The bravery I saw in those children, I needed to tell their stories. But I'm also writing a story about my family and wonderful stories that have come out of my Michigan family, because there are a lot of characters there. These stories, I want to put them on paper so people always have them.
Well, that's the right attitude. That's what I try to encourage people to do. Keep the memories alive by getting them down, finding that joy on paper, because it's always the first book takes a while. Sometimes it takes 12 years or 20 years. It's funny, something happens. Once you see your first book and you know, oh boy, I got that on paper and it's good and it's touching people's heart, then you know that you can just forge ahead and continue writing. You certainly discovered the joy on paper. Elizabeth Mullane, I'm so happy that you were on Joy on Paper today. A special thanks, of course, to Peter Riva for telling me about you. And as I said, when I got the book and I saw the airplanes on the cover, I mean, I just grabbed it. I have to. Because actually, my husband and I, we lived in England. We had a small airplane, and we've recreated some of the flights of the RAF because we flew out of an old World War II RAF base, White Waltham. And so we recreated, sometimes with veterans, we would fly over and the bombing runs that they did. So I've flown over Holland many times, and my husband actually did a parachute drop so that he'd know what it felt like. So again, you captured the story beautifully. It's really great. It's called 60 Blades of Grass. It's very inspiring, and I think people will enjoy reading it and getting out of it the idea that we really have to think about what we're doing, starting wars and having wars. It's a very touching book. So do you have a website you want people to go to?
Sure, ElizabethMullane.com. And I love the feedback I'm getting from my readers. It's so sustaining.
Well, people, get this book, read it, and then do something nice and put a review on Amazon, because that helps authors. It's such a nice thing to do when you enjoy a book, to put a review, because authors need that, right?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on the program.
Well,
You're amazing.
It's been a joy, Elizabeth. I think that you're a fantastic writer, and I look forward to your next book. You just have to let me know when it's going to be out so I can get you on my calendar, okay?
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye.
What a book. First of all, I just like the entire story about an artist who paints in code. Oh, as I was reading, I was thinking, how would I do that? How would I paint in code? It's a wonderful story, and she's done a beautiful job with it. So do get this book. It's available online. Go to her website and you can find out more about her. But she definitely has found the joy on paper that I am always talking to you about. Bye-bye, everyone.